When you think of the word sidekick, what does that mean to you? Give me some sidekicks.
Poncho.
Poncho.
Tonto.
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 Yes. Poncho no sidekick.
Yeah, Poncho. Tonto. Okay. Ed McMahon. Absolutely. Johnny Carson. Who else? Sidekicks.
Robin,
yeah. Who else? Anybody else?
Festus.
Festus? Yeah, that's it. We'll take old Festus. That's a good one. See? Yes? What, we got $300? Woo!
And above.
Give it to Randy. That's good, Sue. Get to eat today. Barney Fife, absolutely. Are sidekicks good? Okay. How many of y'all have ever been mentored by somebody? You have? Tell us a little bit about it.
I have some parents, people that I went to high school with,
go ahead, I'm listening. Good to see you.
They minister to me in private, but I can do that for her. And she's not really a sidekick, I
would say. No?
But
a mentor. Yeah, okay. So that brings up the question, is there a difference between a sidekick and a mentor?
Yeah.
What is the difference? Okay. Yeah, absolutely, and that's very good. Was Ed McMahon ever going to replace Johnny Carson?
No.
He knew it, Johnny Carson. Was Tonto ever going to replace the Lone Ranger?
No.
Was Festus ever going to replace Marshall Dillon? No. We know what they're saying. That's right. And Barney Fife, wasn't it? That's right. Mentor is different. Has anybody here ever been a mentor? Okay, tell us about it.
Well, I'd rather be mentored than mentor somebody. I guess that's my first thought. Because it's a real responsibility, you know.
Okay, absolutely.
Well, as a teacher, I've been mentoring a lot of younger teachers.
Absolutely.
And they try to find a way to make a system work in their classroom. Mm-hmm. That's the part of what you're doing in your classroom.
Okay. All right. Anybody else here been a mentor? Charles?
I was in Big Brothers and Sisters for a while.
That's right.
Two little brothers. The first one, evidently, I wasn't a very good mentor because he wound up going to prison.
Well, that's good. Skip, did you have your hand up?
I did.
Okay, tell us about you being a mentor.
Well, I've been both mentor and tormentor. And I was to a young man at David
Campus, Chief Edward Marshall. Okay, all right. Well, it's fun. I've had the pleasure of being nobody mentored me because I was tended to be rebellious, so if they said go left, I wanted to go right, so that didn't work. So the only thing that mentored me through life was the School of Hard Knocks. You know what I mean? But I enjoy the privilege of mentoring people because you get to share with the ones that are willing to listen your life experiences, and after all, as a mentor, you've been there before, so you're able to share with them. As most of you know, I do sales training, and one of the things that I teach in sales training is when I used to do presentations, if I was going to take somebody in on a presentation, they had two rules. Number one is say hello and goodbye, and rule number two was to say absolutely nothing during the presentation. They're there to learn, not to participate. That rule was broken quite a few times, and so I got to the point where when they would interrupt with comments, I would just very kindly say, you know what, I think since you want to get involved, why don't you just finish the presentation? And of course, that taught a very good lesson. Today we're going to look at a Bible person that was mentored by a prophet. He was not a sidekick. A sidekick just supports and will never reach any higher, generally speaking, than the sidekick status. This man was mentored by Elisha. By the way, did Elisha have a mentor? Elijah, that's right. And so in their mentoring situation, Elisha went around with Elijah, and he was there when Elijah was translated to heaven. And what did Elisha ask? Of anything that he could have asked of Elijah, what did he ask for? His mantle. What did that mean? What, did he want a coat? What did he mean by his wanting his mantle? Pardon? That's right. He wanted what Elijah had, which was the leadings and the blessings of God. So today, we're looking at a gentleman by the name of Gehazi. We're going to call him Mr. G because I have trouble with names, as you all well know. So I don't want to stumble over that name 100 times. So we're going to call him Mr. G. Mr. G had the privilege of traveling around and being with Elisha. And we're going to pick up the story this morning where they're involved with a poor woman. And as Elisha and Mr. G would come through traveling, every time they came to this town, this lady would invite Elisha and his friend in for a meal and a place to stay. And it got to be so common that this woman said to her husband, I tell you what we really need to do. We need to set up a room. So we're going to put a chair, and we're going to put a bed, and we're going to have food. And any time they come through town, they can automatically come to our house and have a place to stay. Pretty nice, isn't it? Very thoughtful. Because remember, these were poor people. Well, one day, Elisha is kind of overwhelmed with her generosity. And in a conversation between Gehazi and Elisha, they want to do something nice for this family. And so they said, well, perhaps we can find a little bit better place for them to live. And the lady says, no, my people are my people. I want to stay where I want to stay. And so one of them then says, well, what is it that you think she would want? Does anybody remember what she wanted?
A child.
They were old, and she said, well, we would like to have a child. And Elisha says, this time next year, you'll have a child. And that's exactly what happened. Now, if you're Elisha and you have been traveling with Elijah throughout most of your prophetic career, does this story seem like it's impossible? No, because he had been there and saw many miracles. He had saw the good side of Elisha and he had saw the bad side of Elisha. Remember, Elijah stands before 450 prophets, but he runs from one woman. So he had seen all of that. Now, when this prophecy was made, how do you think that Gehazi felt, or what do you think went through his mind as Elisha shared with this woman that this was going to happen?
Well, I think he was bored because he's the one that suggested that they had no children.
Okay, all right. And what does that say about his heart?
Good.
That's good. Good suggestion. Elisha says, what do you think we can do? We just want to move. And she says, has no son. So he had to feel good. Do you think he felt part of that experience? Pardon? Pardon me? Yes. Yeah, that Mr. G felt part of that experience. Absolutely, it was his suggestion. So he had to feel good. Now the story moves on. And Elisha goes out and he takes a pot of stew and he does some things and it turns where it's able to eat it. He goes out where an axe head floats. Tools were very, very important. They lost the axe. And so Gehazi is seeing and watching and participating in all of this. Now the story moves on. And one day, Elisha and Mr. G look up. And here comes this same woman. She had a problem. Does anybody know what the problem was? Pardon? The son is dead. He's out working in a field. He suddenly gets sunstroke or his head hurts and he dies. What do you think went through this woman and her husband's mind when the son that was miraculously given to them dies? Would that be a fair question? Is that basically what she said? Pretty close to it. Yeah. So, not mad. Just concerned. She starts and says, saddle my donkey, get my servant, and I'm going to go see the man of God. Now the next part I think is very important to this story. Elisha sees the woman coming. And who does he send to greet the woman? Gehazi. And he goes and says to the woman, Elisha says, find out if husband's okay, she's okay, or the son's okay. And so he asks exactly those questions to the woman. And she says, all is well. And she keeps going towards Elisha. Why did she do that?
She didn't want to deal with Mr.
Jesus. Why? Okay. All right. She wanted to talk to the person that was the man of God. You see, when you have problems, if it's a big problem, do you want to talk to a lowly person that's a reception, not the reception lowly, but in the chain, a receptionist, or do you want to talk with somebody who has authority? That's exactly right. First thing I do when I have problems with people, call in and say, I don't say hi, bye. I say, how much authority do you have over problems? And if they say, well, what do you mean? Or what do you think? Or whatever. I say, immediately, let me talk to your supervisor, because all I'm looking for is somebody says, I have whatever authority you need to get your problem solved. So why go through a bunch of junk? Just get down to the right person. And that's exactly what she did. How do you think that made Mr. G feel?
Well, especially in light of Elisha being sent out by Elisha. I mean,
Yeah.
He's on this mission to buy his master. Yeah. The woman just as fine and walk right by him.
Yeah. Okay. Lloyd came up with a good answer. It made him feel like a sidekick. And so the woman comes. Elisha says, what's going on? She tells him, and she grabs at the feet of Elisha. Now, if you're a mother and your son just passed away, you're going to show emotion. And here's the side note that's in the lesson that I think is absolutely important. What did Gehazi do? Does anybody know? Just a little, two or three words. He pushed her away. Now here's how God works. Here's how God works in this story. And here's how God works in our lives. After the woman explains to Elisha what her problem is, now we assume Elisha, remember Elisha was sick for 16 years. What a contrast in life. Elijah goes to heaven, and the last few years of Elisha's life, he's very sick. And so Elisha tells Mr. G to go on with the woman to the home, take the staff, and lay it on the child's head when he gets there. Get the picture. Elisha's on his way, but he's slow, he's old, and so the servant goes ahead with the woman, gets there, takes the staff, puts it on the child's head. Is the child healed? Absolutely not. In fact, nothing happens. Now, if you're the Gehazi, and you're on the way with the staff representing the prophet, what do you think was going on in his mind? Huh? I got the power. What else? My first miracle. Is that not human nature? So when he gets there, nothing happens. And so when the prophet finally shows up, he goes in, clears the room, prays, son gets up, stretches, yawns, family's reunited. Why do you think at this point the story took place like that?
Why didn't he pray when he did the staff, laid the staff on? Would that have been expected?
Good question. Don't know. I think as we get later on in context, not sure it would have made any difference. But let's take it right here where we're at. He didn't pray. Laid the staff. Why didn't God allow that son to come alive with what the servant to the man of God, and by the way, the word servant there is not what we think of servant, it was an absolute honor. I personally think that he most likely, does most likely give me an out? Good. Most likely, is it hot in here? Oh, no. Okay. There goes that idea. Most likely, he was in line perhaps to be the next prophet. Because remember, he's not a sidekick. He is mentoring. So why did not God allow this man to be the healer of this son? Would it have taken away from Elisha's ministry? Absolutely not. What would it have done to this man? Okay. Does it show that perhaps he was not ready to take on the mantle? You see, God's job, through the name of Yahweh, is I must work with you to point out your condition so that when you realize your condition, you will know I have the power to solve that problem. And if you rely on me, then we can continue our journey. We do this with our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren all the time. And so God did not allow this because He was not ready. And when Elisha shows up, he's healed. Now, if you were Gehazi, what would you have learned from this experience, do you think? There's always two ways you go in any experience. You go one way or you go the other way. You never remain neutral. So what do you think he should have learned, and what do you think he did learn? What should he have learned? Pardon?
Should have been a humble person.
Should have been humble. That's exactly right. How many of y'all know who Dallas Holm is? Well, we're showing our age. Okay. Well, I like Dallas Holm. I've told this story a couple times, but we'll tell it again because it is a humble. I told Charles I was going to be a great music producer. Is that correct? See, I thought one of the great things we could do at the Arlington Church is Dallas Holm has an album that's a masterpiece, my opinion, called His Last Days. And the final song on that is I'll Rise Again, which is the one he's noted for. And in that album, he has, from Sunday through the Lord's Supper, the crucifixion, and of course the resurrection with Rise Again. I've seen Dallas Holm in person many, many times. So I thought, wow, what a great Easter program to bring Dallas Holm to the Arlington Church. And Rob and I had two short sermonettes that would fit into that album. One would be on the crucifixion. He sings a song that says, "What will you do?" Talking about as you look to the cross of Calvary, what will you do? And my thought was to say, there's four people standing at the cross today. One is Simon who carried the cross. Two is the Roman centurion. Three is the thief that's at the cross. And fourth, oh yeah, I know who the fourth one is. That's you. And then Dallas Holm steps forward and sings, "What will you do?" And then Rob would give a short sermonette and talk about how everything was doom and gloom for the disciples, which it was. And then Dallas Holm steps forward and does "I'll Rise Again." Well, I thought it was ingenious. Well, he didn't. But here's the point I want to make. I prayed to God. I said, "God, I don't like gray answers. You know I want to do this. You know I'm going to dedicate this." I mean, I went over to their home office and we made a video and we did all kinds of things, put it together. Maybe the video was the problem. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, did a lot of work on it. And I said, "God, you know I want to do this. It almost pains me to ask you to help me because I really want to do this." Because that's the way God and I talk. "But if you don't want me to do this, nail the door shut." And that's exactly what he did. Now, I do tell God every once in a while I think he owes me one, but he nailed the door shut. So, I just have to sit back and learn from that. Very painful. Still think it's a good idea. But I've given up on it, see? Because he did what? He nailed the door shut. It's exactly what God did for Gehazi. When you think that your plan is as good as God can come up with, or a little bit better than God can come up with, if he allows you to run with that program, what happens? Not in my case, because I'm a very humble person, but there could have been for most people a little tendency to say, man, if this works here, let's go to Broadway. I mean, you know, I think I've never been, have I been known to be think small. I think, you see, he nailed the door shut and I had my answer, so I had to go back and reevaluate. It's what God did to this man. The message is loud and clear. You are not ready. And God does not allow us to do things that continue down to a path that is going to bring detriment to us. Because He loves us too much. So now the next time we hear of Mr. G, he sees all of these miracles, and then there's a gentleman by the name of Naaman, captain in the Syrian army. Now, Syria's fighting with Israel, winning more than they're losing. And yet there was a little captive Israelite woman who thought enough of Naaman to tell him to go over and see a man and that he could be cured of his disease, which was leprosy. And we all know the story. Naaman goes over. Don't want to get into that part of the story because in this particular day, that's not the most important. But he goes over. He's expecting placing of the hands on him. He's expecting a wave of a staff. Expecting a prayer and an answer. And what does he get? Go jong. Yeah. Go, and not only that, a dirty one.
Seven times.
Now he has a real decision to make. Now let's go through the rationalization very quick. Syria has clean rivers. This one's a dirty river. Why seven? In fact, he kind of bucks up at it, doesn't he? Oh, you got to be kidding me. You ever say that to God? You got to be kidding me. Finally, somebody gets some sense in his head and says, now let's see, you have leprosy. He says you can be cured. We came all this way. What in the world are you thinking about? And so it happens. And he comes up, no leprosy. Now, if God had done this in your life, and you're a man of wealth and means, what would you want to do? Pardon? You'd want to give a thank offering. Now, I personally like thank offerings for the Arlington Church. I have said this many, many, many times. Or something like that. Yeah. He wants to give them an offering. Now, is that natural? Absolutely. And Elisha says, no thank you. Why? Why couldn't he have said, well, let's see, we have a building fund, we got a small group fund, we got a church budget, I need a new robe. Why did he say no thank you?
He wanted that leader to know that God's grace is free.
Absolutely. And is that important?
Yes.
God is working with a heathen man. And when he walked away, Elisha wanted one thing for him to know. By the way, that is the message that we want everybody we come in contact to know. It's not me. It's God. And there are no strings attached. And so Naaman goes off and feels very good. Now, let's see why God has dealt with Gehazi this way. Because what does he do? Pardon?
He went by to get...
Why?
He was the treasurer. He probably had a favorite charity he was
going
to get it to.
I tell you, he had a real favorite charity. Why did he go?
greedy, it is.
Greedy in what? For money? Greedy for what?
We felt Elisha made a mistake. He really did. He felt like he should have accepted that because really the fellow had good intentions. Wasn't it the man had bad intentions?
By the way, is there anybody in the New Testament that had this same rationalization? Yeah. Judas. Do you think somewhere in the 3.5 years of ministry... By the way, one of the fun things to read through the New Testament is see how many times Jesus said, how many times Jesus did, and how many things He did that pointed directly towards Judas, the man who was not called to be a disciple. How many things He did to point to him to say, Judas, Judas, can't you see who I am? And I'm sure somewhere in the conversation that Jesus went over this story with His disciples as well as Judas himself. Because you see, there's never in the cycle of life anything new that ever happens. It's all repeated over and over and over. And so here was a man who was not... He saw himself less as a person being mentor. He became a sidekick to Elisha. He couldn't heal. He tried to keep the woman from coming to Elisha and was pushed away. And perhaps he saw himself more and more diminished. And he came to a point where he said, hey, if I'm going to be a follower of this man Elisha and a follower of God, I've got to get something out of it for myself. And so he goes. And how do we know that his intentions were not honorable, by the way? Said, the Master sent me. Things have changed. There's two young call porters who have come in from Oklahoma. And they need a place to live. And they need some new clothes. And we can take some of that funds and help these two young men. An out and outright lie. And what does Naaman do? Yeah, he gives him more than he asked for. Because why? If God does something in your life and you have a chance to respond, are you going to ask, well, what's the least I can give to get by to show my thankfulness? He asked for 1 talent of silver and he got double. Now here comes Mr. G back. And there's Elisha. What question does Elisha ask him? Pardon?
Where have you been?
Where have you been? I always like it when somebody studies their lesson. That's fun. Where have you been? And where did he say he'd been?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. See? He tells what his intentions were. Been nowhere. Huh. Then he reveals to him what had happened. Elisha does. Now here's the tough part of the story. What happens to this mentored person who's now not even a sidekick? Pretty harsh. How's that?
He said all your descendants will have reference to him.
Pretty harsh. So what do we learn from this? Don't do what God says exactly. And wham. Nope. Absolutely. That's one of the most critical. What do you think, and I'm not one of these that believe there's degrees of responsibility, but I don't know how to phrase the question any different. What do you think after being mentored by Elisha all this time, how well do you think he knew what was right from wrong, the way that God worked and didn't work? What was that?
I
Yes.
I think there are degrees of responsibility.
Okay.
He was given the opportunity to have an immense honor to be mentored and possibly take up the cloak and the duties.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
It's funny, but obviously what it's to humble himself and to be humble, and it doesn't mean that he couldn't have repented at that point. We don't know that.
Well, we're going to look at something very strange in a second, yes.
He wasn't struck dead.
That's right. Dr. Coy?
Judas and Mr. G really had the same problem. It was all about self.
That's right. Yeah.
They were both in a position where they had the opportunity to see God's will.
Yeah,
refused to put self out
of it. Absolutely. Now let's move on to the end of the story, because we're going to go down the road a little bit and we come across Gehazi again. Old man. Remember this nice Shunammite woman with the dead son and the alive son? Well, someone comes to her, tells her there's going to be a famine, and take off. And so she leaves for 7 years. And when she gets ready to come back, she has no land and no house. And so it's called upon the king to give her some land and a house. And the king says, you know, I don't know about that. And somehow Gehazi is still around. And then he begins to tell the story of what had happened with this woman, how she was kind to Elisha, and how that the son was born, the son died, the son was raised, and he certainly puts in a good word for this woman, and the king gives her some land and a house. What do you think about that attitude by this man? Is that a good thing? Think he learned anything? What would you read into this? Was he bitter? Do you think he was bitter?
He probably wouldn't say a word.
Well, absolutely. He didn't have to partake in this. How many times have you sat around and you think, hey, I kind of know the answer to that, but if they're so dumb they can't figure it out for themselves, why am I going to give them the answer? I'm surely not the only one who's ever done that, am I? Yeah. He could not have said anything. Now, the writer of the Quarterly today, he would like for us to emphasize that perhaps he was reminiscing about the good old days and he was very sad. I choose not to read that in there particularly. I choose to read into it that maybe, just maybe, when you've gone to the bottom, when you're in the pig's pen, when you have leprosy, and you have no hope, maybe, just maybe, everything dawned upon him and what his situation was. And when he had a chance, because he was still hanging around with some of the king's people, and he had a chance to help somebody, and he took advantage of it. This I am assured, that no matter what your life journey is like, it's not all up here, and it's all not down here. It's a combination of up and down and up and down. And one thing I will assure you is that when God works in your life, He's not going to bring, or there's not going to be obstacles that come into your life and you do not overcome them, that He's going to allow you to go on down life's journey. Because when He does that, what's the tendency to happen? Pardon?
It's a disaster.
It's a disaster. You know, look at this DWI deals. How many times have you read in the paper where this was the fourth DWI, the fifth DWI, the sixth, whatever? So when the mercy of the court says, oh, you poor person, I know you were three times drunk, I know you had an accident, but will you promise not to ever, ever do that again? And they say, absolutely. What have they learned? If you got a good story, and you know how to use it, and you got a decent lawyer, you can get by with it, and that's the only thing they ever learn. And God will not allow that in your life. You can't go out. What's a cheap seed to buy? I know nothing about gardening because why? I don't want to. That's right. Don't ever lose sight of that. So what's a cheap seed to buy? Corn, okay. What's the most expensive crop you can raise? That costs thousands of dollars. And some think I have life easy. Well, let's say marijuana. What the heck? You can't plant corn and get marijuana because what do you learn? The next time, go buy more corn seeds. Am I correct? And so God does not let things, when you get off the beaten path, go smoothly because you think you're getting away with it. God is interested in only one thing, and that is you spending eternity with Him. Absolutely doesn't give up on you. Because the greatest problem that we have is our past. When Rob and I went into this ministry, sometimes we don't have the best past in the world because remember, our journey's been up and been down. That's why we talk with passion. We've been there. And sure enough, the first place we went, my past surfaced. Wasn't a pleasant deal. Survived it. I often thank God He got it out of the way very quickly. And so we went in on Saturday night. We were dead tired. Sue and I went to bed about 8 o'clock. And we happened to... Sue got up the next morning, turned the TV on, and there was Joel Osteen. Never heard Joel Osteen. She had never heard Joel Osteen. He was just on TV. Guess what his sermon was? The devil will bring your past up over and over and over and over and over, and don't you ever let him do that. Because today's today and tomorrow's tomorrow. You couldn't have found a better sermon for Sue and Mai's life that we could have ever heard in our life. And I went and sent off and got the tape. God never stops with you when you're down here. That's when He works the hardest. And so we have Gehazi. He could have been Elijah, Elisha, and the book of Gehazi. He failed. But God pointed out every step of the way, you can't do it on your own. It's not about you, it's about me. So I don't know at the end, was he an old man reminiscing? Don't know. I do know one thing, his decision, based upon what he had saw, was the correct one for this woman. Normally I don't let people have the last say, but today I'm in a good mood. No, that's exactly right. See? So what's the lesson? If God doesn't want Dallas Home to come and do this program here, He's not going to let it happen. If God doesn't want you to continue to go down a path that leads to destruction, He's not going to let it happen because you're His child. Father in heaven, help us not to be a Gehazi and go through the tough times to do it on our own. Perhaps this story ends on a powerful goodness. But we have the same story in Judas, who went out after seeing that face and hung himself. Help us not to go through those two experiences. Help us to always look upon You, remember who You are, and ask for Your guidance. This is our prayer today in the precious name of Jesus. Amen.